So plant can teach us how to manipulate this language of bacteria. And this is what we use now in science. We use this in the medical sciences, in the treatment of diseased humans and animals. But we use it also in what I say is a positive impact, that we can train bacterial communication to become more optimal fermenters, to produce, for example, less methane. That's what we all want. And so we have some instruments, and this is where you see that modern farm management tools go in to give a cow in an individual phase of life these kind of phytogenic mixtures that can support the stress situations and prevent diseases.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed.
With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today I am honored to welcome to the show a very esteemed scientist, Dr. Joanna Fink-Gremmels, who is joining us today from the Netherlands, I believe. She spent more than 25 years at Utrecht University, rising to the head of the department there in a teaching and research role. She's a specialist in pharmacology and toxicology, and currently she's working as a consultant to the feed and animal health industries. Dr. Fink-Gremmels, thanks so much for joining today.
Thank you for the invitation. My pleasure to be here.
Can you help us understand what drew you into this line of work? So you got trained as a veterinarian, you ended up specializing in toxicology and pharmacology. Was that your dream from the time you were 5 years old, or how did you end up there?
You should add something to my time. I'm trained as clinical veterinarian and clinical pharmacology and clinical toxicology. So my main interest was also in relating, translating science into practical work. And this is what I still do. We are scientists and we do wonderful molecular work in daily life. But the main challenge we face is to translating this into daily practice.
So did you grow up on a farm, or what gave you that passion for...
I was born in Germany, actually, but spent most of my personal life in the Netherlands. And I grew up on a dairy farm. So I was more or less, when I was 6 years old, I started milking cows.
Okay.
You know, with simple devices at that time, but I love them. And when I was a teenager, people had Elvis Presley on and all the Beatles and everything on the walls, and I had Jersey cows. Because family, we had no jerseys, and I was in England at that time for the first time visiting family there, and I had all my room was just, you know, one scenery of Jersey cows.
Oh, very good. So did you do your university work in the Netherlands, or did you get trained elsewhere?
No, I was trained in Germany. You know, I did the veterinary studies in Germany. At that time, Hanover School in Germany was one of the most famous schools in Europe.
Sure.
And I spent a little bit of time in Canada and a little bit of time in the United States, but more for my scientific training. And then I went back to university, starting an academic career in relation to more or less animal health, animal welfare. And of course, my first in a postdoc period, I was developing drugs, particularly antibiotics. And that brought me also into the field, which I'm still busy in, understanding the relationship between microbes and the animal, so the host. And this is also brought me to the subject we're discussing today, the biofilm story.
If you don't mind, we'll take a little sidetrack, because what I think of you as like a absolute world expert in is mycotoxins, and maybe that's maybe not your current your current focus, but you've made what do you think was maybe one or two of your biggest contributions in that space?
You know, if you look into my scientific record, you find two papers on top of everything. And one was biofilms and mastitis, because I was one of the first one, you know, pointing towards this relation. And my other one is mycotoxins in dairy cows. Because mycotoxins, you know, everybody talks about mycotoxins in poultry and in pigs, but people tend to neglect dairy cows. And, you know, we learn that mycotoxins are degraded in the rumen, but they are not completely degraded. And we have mycotoxins nobody talks of because they are not relevant for human medicine or human health, but they are very relevant for our cows.
Modern bacteria create biofilms, and biofilm-related issues are at the core of most culling reasons on modern dairy farms. AHV provides the only program for biofilm management in cows and calves. How much of your herd's potential gets choked out by biofilm each year? To learn more, visit www.ahvint.com/US.
So I could get too far down that road. So we want to focus on biofilms today. So we should start out, you know, we were talking before we started recording here that one thing that's really special about this podcast is we have all kinds of people listening, people working on dairy farms, people that are scientists, people that are consultants for the industry. So help us all get on the same starting point, if you would. What can you explain what a biofilm is in the first place?
To say it in simple words, a biofilm is a community of bacteria, and not only bacteria, but also other microorganisms that are sessile. They sit on something. And sitting together on something enables them to form a biofilm. And a biofilm is, in principle, a community of these bacteria, and they produce a matrix called the extracellular matrix in scientific terms. And this is a kind of slimy layer. And that keeps them together and keeps them attached to the surface. And this is the normal lifestyle of a bacterium. We all think about bacteria sitting somewhere in a petri dish or something like this, you know, in the science world. But it's not true. If we go to the real world, all bacteria we have in our environment live in principle in biofilms. Because there they are protected and they are resilient to environmental threats.
Okay, so
if you ask me where you have a biofilm on a dairy farm, I simply can say everywhere. Because you have a biofilm in the water tank, you have a biofilm in your milking device, you have the biofilm in the rumen of a cow, and unfortunately, you have also biofilms in tissues of cows. And this is, of course, a pathological condition.
I come at this with very little knowledge, so some of these questions may be ignorant, but when I think of biofilm, I tend to think of something somewhat analogous to like a mucus layer in the gut that's like secreted proteins holding fluids. Is it something like that? Is it fluid? Is it proteins that the bacteria release?
Yes, it is a little bit of both. Because bacteria, you know, they produce what we call these extracellular matrix. So they produce, in principle, sugars, polysaccharides. And the sugars is the main matrix of a biofilm. A biofilm contains also some proteins and also some DNA. And we come to this when we talk about therapeutic resistance of biofilms. But the main thing you see is, in principle, a slimy layer. And this is sugar plus water.
Simple enough.
And you can often not see it. You know, when I go to a farm, you know, farmer said, I cannot see it. I said, no, you cannot see it, but you can feel it. Because, you know, when you go to the water bucket of a cow and you go with your hands through it, you feel a kind of a slimy matrix.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Very easy.
Okay. Yep.
You have it also in your bathroom, by the way. Because there's a lot of humidity and you have it everywhere, as I mentioned before.
One thing you mentioned is that the biofilm is sort of provides the bacteria with sort of protection. How exactly is it protective?
The protective is, first of all, it is a barrier. You know, these polysaccharide network with water filled into a kind of a slimy mucosal layer is, of course, a mechanical protection. But on the other hand, you know, within the biofilm, the bacteria form a real community. And we come to the language of bacteria in a few minutes, because this community can share information, can synchronize their gene expression, can also switch down genes so they can go into a kind of dormant stage, protecting them from a shortage in nutrients or hydrogen for a moment. So it is really a complex mechanisms that protect them from all kind of environmental stresses. So mechanically, but also metabolic alterations within the biofilm makes the biofilm very resistant to environmental stresses.
And that's where the community can almost start acting like a multicellular organism almost.
And, you know, they need, you know, the good thing is that they can survive. For example, in a rumen, it is very important that we have on every particle of fiber, we have biofilms. They control the entire rumen fermentation process in a synchronized manner, so perfect. And we learn a lot about this, how we can steer that. Methane reduction is one of the points we are approaching, but also milk production, fatty acid production, short-chain fatty acid production. So we can manipulate that. But on the other hand, you know, it is like I call them sometimes our little soldiers, because a simple bacterium could never attack a big cell of the host, mammary gland, for example.
Right.
But if you are many and you coordinate your action, then you are successful and you can express your virulence factors and you can attack cells. And cells in a mammary gland, and I use this as an example, are, of course, perfect nutrients for these bacteria.
Do you see a multi-species biofilm community as the normal, or do they prefer to be within like the same species in a biofilm?
It depends on your environment. In a rumen, biofilms are always multi-species. We have bacteria, we have fungi, we have protozoa, and we have the archaea. So that is normally we expect a multi-species biofilm. If you go to infectious diseases, then we have very often single pathogen biofilms.
Okay.
So it depends a little bit on the environment and on the situation you are discussing.
So then I know this starts to become very relevant for medicine in that this has an influence on how antibiotics work or don't work. Can you help us understand that?
You know, that was in principle when we detected biofilms. They first were only detected as a state of bacteria. It's a phenotypic stage, so not genetics, but synchronizing metabolic features of bacteria and these extracellular matrix, I have to come back to that, protects them from antibiotics. And in human medicine, we at the moment estimate that between 60 and 80% of chronic infections are biofilm mediated infections. And in a human body, you find biofilms, and you can translate that immediately to cows. You can find biofilms in all organs that have an internal space. So, for example, the urinary bladder, but also the airways. You know, airflow is a kind of stressor for bacteria. So they try to attach to the surface, to the mucosal surface, and form a biofilm to survive.
Sure.
And you have that in the uterus, and you have that in the mammary gland. And you have that also in on the surface, wounds, for example, or digital dermatitis in cows. That's all biofilm related. And that makes them so difficult to treat them and makes them so easy to become a chronic infection.
So is the issue with biofilms and resistance to antibiotics, is it mostly because the antibiotics are slow to penetrate the biofilm? Or is it more about the communication among the bacteria that's sort of like ramping up resistance genes or something like that?
That's right. It's both.
Okay.
Honestly, it's both. You know, in the beginning, we thought it was only the mechanical barrier, you know, these extracellular matrix, the slimy layer, preventing antibiotics to penetrate. But then research showed that this is not the main mechanism. The main mechanism is that within a biofilm, bacteria change their gene expression. And that makes them also resilient to typical targets of antibiotics. So, for example, they turn down their protein synthesis, they turn down their membrane synthesis in a biofilm, And, you know, antibiotics target protein synthesis, target membrane synthesis, and they simply do not work because their target is gone.
Yeah.
And an additional point, very important in this context, is that within a biofilm, if you have resistant bacteria that have already acquired resistant genes, they exchange them very rapidly. So a biofilm is a multiplier of the exchange of resistant genes.
Okay, so let's talk specifically. You kind of brought in some examples, but let's talk in more detail about where you think this is the most relevant in managing dairy cows and calves. What diseases are specifically likely to be biofilm issues?
The most important diseases we do have, but I want to go to the management and I want to go to diseases.
Okay, sounds good.
Because perhaps I may start with management, because for a farmer, that is easy to understand.
Yep.
And it brings him to understand also what happens from the veterinary point of view within the animal. You know, where you have on a farm, you have the most important biofilms are in the water supplies. And this can go to the tubing of your water supply, and it can go to directly into the drinking facilities you do have. Now, you know, as a farmer, a cow has to drink fresh water. But go, and what I say, go into your own water buckets you have on your farm, whatever it is, and test them for this slimy layer. Because this slimy layer gives an off taste for the cow, so they do not like the water anymore. That can reduce water intake with all the negative effects. And it is a source between within the biofilm. You have some normal bacteria, so that are not harmful. But you have also hidden pathogenic bacteria and even viruses. They try to hide in a biofilm. And this makes a biofilm a general risk to farmers and cows' health. You know, in the management system, so when I go on a farm, the first thing I do is I look into the water buckets and I take the hand of a farmer and say, let's try if you have a biofilm. Because this is one of the first and very easy measures you can take to improve the health of the animal, but also to reduce the stress of infection. Think of mycoplasma, for example. Mycoplasma cannot survive in the environment, but survive perfectly in a biofilm. So that is something to make you understand that biofilms are a normal way of life for a bacterium and other microorganisms, but they really are important if you want to protect your animals from these kind of hidden sources of infection and pathogens.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's interesting because I've heard very experienced consultants say that, you know, when they work with a new herd, the first thing they focus on is the water, the cleanliness of water. They never talked about biofilm, but yeah, the same point is there. Yep.
Definitely. You know, the first point, the most important nutrient for a cow is water. Never forget that.
So if an animal is consuming water that's contaminated with biofilm, is there, I mean, do you see the risk of that being that there's bacteria that normally couldn't become established in the gut now becoming established and possibly causing enteric disease? Or what do you see is the biggest risk there?
You know, they can inhale it because we very often have in calves, you have even inhalation of pathogenic bacteria. It is, you know, it's depending very much on the situation, but you just have to realize that you have an exposure of the animal 7/24. So, you know, on all moments in daily life. And this is, of course, when something happens, you know, and a little wound or a little stress situation, then animals become vulnerable and you have the negative impact of that. So that is, in principle, number one, where we always start with. The other thing is then that you have biofilms in the rumen, because cows, of course, depend more or less on rumen fermentation processes in the daily life and nutrition. Okay, we know everything about how to optimize a diet for a cow, you know, in terms of nutrients. But we sometimes forget that it's not only nutrient supply, but that rumen health is a little bit more. Rumen health is stability. You know, if you have a rumen with very high diurnal exchanges or modifications of the pH value, the cow will not function optimal. So we are looking very carefully into the rumen biofilms, and we can manipulate them. And that is, you know, the most recent approaches towards rumen nutrition. It is methane reduction, for example. It is dry cow management. So this is where we use our knowledge about these rumen biofilms in daily life. So that's actual substance. And then I come to the veterinary field. And as a veterinarian, I was trained, and I use on purpose, was trained to treat diseases. You know, we used antibiotics, we used everything to treat diseases. But if we go to modern farm management, we do not want to treat, because every disease causes money. Simple as that. The economic balance of a farm goes down if you have diseased animals. So the focus is now to prevent diseases, to keep the cows in all their stress situations, going from dry cow, going into calving, going into negative energy balance in the first part of milk production. We have to manage cows' health. And part of the management to keep the lady's production stable and keeping them in good health and well-being, then we can also prevent diseases. And we use now this knowledge we have on biofilms, and I shouldn't say on biofilms only, I should say on quorum sensing. Because the big language behind biofilms is quorum sensing, and we can use this knowledge for a better management of cows.
Let's define that term. I do want to get into that. Quorum sensing, what does that mean?
It's a difficult term, but it's inherent to biofilm formation. You know, we said biofilms are communities of bacteria or microorganisms that coordinate their metabolic status and gene expression status to form the biofilm. But how they do this? And if we ask us how can they do this from the individual to a coordinated community action, they need a kind of a language. And we do have a language. And this language consists of peptides, consists of certain metabolites, bacteria excrete in the surface, and they are sensed by neighboring bacteria. So they talk together. And this talk results in a coordinated action. And this coordinated action starts when there is a certain quorum of bacteria. So a quorum is a certain amount or number of individual bacteria. When they have reached this quorum, then they can achieve their goal. And this we call quorum sensing. And it is really the language to do it. Biofilm is only the external signal we see. You know, biofilms, we can beautifully measure, we can stain them, we can see them. But the most important part to interfere with microbial communication or microbial system, like the rumen, is that we understand quorum sensing. When do they express what and how they make understood by the neighbors, by the other bacteria or the other protozoa? And this is, I think, the most rapidly developing research area at the moment. We understand the biofilms because we can see them, we can stain them. But we now learn all the details of a language. And it is like on the global level, they have different languages. You know, I speak German, I speak Dutch, and now I have to speak English. And this is like bacteria. You know, an E. coli speaks a different language than another pathogen, or it speaks a different language than a lactobacillus in the intestine. So, but they can understand each other to a certain extent. And this is the beauty of it.
I was trying to think of an analogy. It's a little bit like my daughter's soccer team right now. We're trying to use our team messaging app to make sure we can have 11 players at a game on Saturday, right? Because there's no point to show up if you don't have a team there. It's kind of the same thing, right?
Teaming up is the most important. You know, I always call it, you know, the bacteria team up to achieve their goal. And the goal can be very positive. You know, true. You know, optimal yep. fermentation processes in the rumen, optimal use yep. of nutrients. And it can be negative. And negative is if they are sitting somewhere in a mammary gland or in any other tissue, then they also team up to become aggressive, destroy cells, and cause inflammation.
Okay, the last question I want to dig into before we run out of time, you alluded to, and I'm sure this is sort of cutting edge, and you know maybe we don't know all the answers yet, but you alluded to the idea that we can use the knowledge we've gained to try to sort of improve the situation, prevent disease. Are you talking about ways of sort of shortcutting quorum sensing or disrupting it? Or
I would not always disrupt it. We are trying to manipulate quorum sensing. And, you know, there is a creature in the world that has the ability to manipulate quorum sensing more or less optimal, and this is plants. Hmm. Because plants cannot run away. Plants have to live in a rich soil, and they have to deal with the microbiome in the soil. So plant can teach us how to manipulate this language of bacteria. And this is what we use now in science. We use this in the medical sciences, in the treatment of diseased humans and animals. But we use it also in what I say is a positive impact, that we can train bacteria communication to become more optimal fermenters, to produce, for example, less methane. That's what we all want. And so we have some instruments, and this is where you see that modern farm management tools go into, give a cow in an individual phase of life these kind of phytogenic mixtures that can support the stress situations and prevent diseases. So we can increase milk yield, but you also see that there are now new products on the market that can help cows to go dry without too much stress. It's a kind of animal welfare approach, but it is also very, very good for udder health because she has to face the next lactation. And the beauty of these kind of remedies is that they can use them temporarily. So they have not a persistent effect, because of course you do not want to keep a cow dry forever.
Right.
But you can help her in the transition from high milk yields to dry cow by just manipulating for a short period rumen fermentation. And this is really a wonderful approach. But we do the same thing. For example, if you introduce new diets, you can use this in just supporting, or you have the stress cow, you know, the high producing cow, you have heat stress. Heat stress is a big issue in dairy herds at the moment. And there we can use this knowledge of quorum sensing. We test for biofilm formation. That is an easy test in the lab. And then we can go into the detail and can formulate products that can be used at the farm level by the farmer himself, because he knows the best when the cow has stress. And so these are on-farm products that are available on the market right now. And this is a new vision on animal health, because we want to keep them healthy. We want to keep them productive. We want to prevent diseases, because if they have no internal stress and no internal dysbacteriosis of the rumen or the intestines, they are much more resilient to any kind of infectious diseases.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but some of this is hitting me different than what I've heard before. Am I understanding you correct that you would argue that maybe the most impactful mechanism driving responses to phytochemicals may be through microbial signaling as opposed to direct effects on the animal?
Yes, I think, you know, 90% of the effect we see is microbial signaling. And we have, what you do then in research, because I've developed drugs my whole life, what you do in research, you test for this microbial signaling effects, and you combine this with anti-inflammatory actions. because you know what is the most and always almost forgotten quorum sensing inhibitor and anti-inflammatory drug? You will not believe it. It's aspirin. The first compound that was detected with its dual activity was aspirin. But it was for 100 years on the market and nobody did know.
Right.
But it is still a wonderful example to mention here. Now, this we are not, at the moment, we are refining this because you cannot aspirin give to the cow. But we can give a lot of aspirin is from the plant. So we can give a lot of plant metabolites. We can mix them in a certain way. We can make extracts that are really targeted to certain microbial communities. Talking about the rumen, this is a mammary gland. Rumen is a big, big issue. You know, with hundreds and millions of different microorganisms, a cow can be a single infection, Staph aureus infections or Galactia or whatever you have. So it is a target you are and trying to attack by these kind of mixtures of botanicals, or phytogenics, we call them now. It's a big market and a big research area.
It's fascinating. So we'll be sending all the listeners a test later. We'll have to define quorum sensing and biofilms and phytogenics. So we'll expect you all to get 100% after this.
It's time for our famous three.
Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of Smartamine M, the best in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. AgriTrack, leading traction solutions for herd health. Contact us today to boost safety, comfort, and savings for your herd. Invest in the best. Who would your cows choose? Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd.
I love it, though. This is fascinating stuff. All right, well, we have three questions that we ask of everyone, so looking forward to seeing what you have to share here. So our first question is, what's your favorite dairy-related or science, if you wanted, book or resource that you turn to?
It's, you know, as I mentioned before, biofilm is a rapidly developing field. Microbial communication, quorum sensing, phytogenics. So there is no book. I just read the scientific literature because there's something exciting more or less every week.
That's kind of fun to work in an area like that, isn't it? Yeah, it's motivating.
The biggest one is that I have now a little bit more time. You know, I'm no longer head of department. You know, I'm consultant and I'm just reading and absorbing knowledge. I love that.
No more personnel issues to deal with.
I have the time to go to farms. I mean, that is important for me as well. You know, the daily connection with farmers and also to look into my, you know, we always call them our ladies, you know, looking into our dairies and, you know, see how they behave, how they communicate, the animals communicate and how we can see that products make a difference.
Great. All right. What, do you have a favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
I'm playing piano and I'm a musician, so I love to go to concerts and these type of things. But that is also giving me the relaxed time you need when you're still quite hard working in science.
Good answer. All right. Then lastly, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
A real good dairy professional knows his or her cows. Observing cows, even if you have thousands of them, but taking the time or asking your people to look at every individual animal for a few seconds a day makes you the most professional and productive farmer. Only cows can tell you, not textbooks. But cows can tell you what they feel, what they need, and you can see how to support them.
Well said. Good wisdom there. The person that can read the cows is worth a lot on a dairy.
Yes, that's it. You know, I always taught my students, you can tell me everything, you can learn every formula, you can tell me everything you have in textbooks, but I want to see you how you look at a cow and what you see. I really trained them to look at a cow. It sounds stupid, but it's a way to come to diagnosis and to come to intervention strategies and management strategies. And it's a cow and it's a herd.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Fink-Gremmels, for joining us today. I very, very much enjoyed this conversation.
I hope other people enjoy it too.
So this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. And if you haven't followed or liked the show yet, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.